TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Our Common Future Under Climate Change. In the early days of July 2015, over 100 countries sent 2,000 delegates to Paris to discuss the physical, economic, and social aspects of climate change. The conference hoped to inspire ambition for a global climate treaty later this year, in December, at the COP21 climate conference, also in Paris. Some prominent conference speakers stated matter-of-factly that we need not just reduce, but actually end the carbon-based economy that relies on oil, coal, and gas. And we have to do it within the next 2 decades. That's probably the greatest challenge humanity ever faced. Many have agreed that Paris in 2015 is the time and place to finally sign an international treaty requiring all nations to begin reducing carbon emissions. The French president, François Hollande, had planned to open the conference, but he was busy in meetings over the debt crisis in Greece. In his place, 2 very interesting women gave the keynotes. Najat Vallaud-Belkacem is the Minister of Education, Higher Education and Research. She was born in 1977 in Morocco, in a village near Nador. Previously, she was Minister of Women's Rights. Ségolène Royal is a prominent member of the French Socialist Party and the Minister for Ecology, Sustainable Development and Energy. She's a former member of the National Assembly and has held several ministerial positions. The first woman in France to be nominated by a major party, she was the socialist candidate in the 2007 French presidential elections, but she lost to Nicolas Sarkozy. Here are 2 women in ministerial positions, one developing a curriculum for French schools to teach the science of climate change, the other, Ségolène Royal, often jokingly called the climate minister. They set the tone for our common future. Their concept of the science of climate change stands in extraordinary contrast to the discourse within the U.S. Congress, where climate change deniers still hold forth. Listening to the 2 women, I was reminded of Jon Stewart's Daily Show right after the huge climate march in New York City in September 2014. Jon Stewart asked rhetorically why we even needed 400,000 people to come out in support of reducing carbon emissions.
Do we really need a march to raise awareness about global climate change? I mean, it's an accepted scientific phenomenon pretty much everywhere. Here's why you need the march. It's accepted pretty much everywhere, but there's one place called the United States House of Representatives Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. Last week, they held a hearing on President Obama's plan to shrink carbon emissions 30% by 2030. The hearing's Sisyphus, presidential science advisor John Holdren, charged with the impossible task of pushing 1 million pounds of idiot up a mountain. Of course, like any avalanche, it began rather innocuously. Texas Republican Steve Stockman.
The lead scientist at NASA said this. He said that what ended the ice age was global wobbling. Is the wobbling of the Earth included in any of your modelings? And the answer was no. When you have a model and you say we're going to leave out the most important impact of that model out of our theory and not talk about global wobbling, how can you make projections?
What's up, scientists? He sees your so-called global warming and raises you a global wobbling. Explain that, Dr. Whitehouse.
Global wobbling, which refers to changes in the Earth's tilt and orbit, takes place on characteristic time scales of 22,000 years, 44,000 years, and 100,000 years. It is very slow. Global wobbling is a tiny effect on the time scale of 100 years in which we try to run these models.
All right, Holdren, you aced the wobble warming. Riddle me this.
At what point a level of CO2 does CO2 become damaging? At what level does it become harmful to human beings?
Boom! How can CO2 levels be dangerous when I can still breathe?
Vice Chairman Rohrabacher, I always enjoy my interactions with you. I have to say, with respect, that's a red herring. We are not interested in carbon dioxide concentrations because of their direct effect on human health. We're interested in them because of their effect on the world's climate. And climate change has effects
on human
health.
So it's a red herring.
And it got more amazing as it went.
That's from a September 2014 Daily Show. And there'll be another amazing clip from that hearing halfway through this program. Back to the July 2015 conference, Our Common Future Under Climate Change, opened by two senior ministers in the French government, Najat Vallaud Belkacem and Ségolène Royal. Belkacem is the Minister of Education, Higher Education and Research. Here is the voice of her translator.
Thank you, Minister, dear Ségolène. ADG of UNESCO, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I know you're expecting to hear the President of the Republic this morning, but unfortunately, he can't be with us. He has asked us to speak, and I would like to say it's a great pleasure for me to speak here. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the human race had to face up to a new responsibility. And one day, humans stopped and thought about the effect of its industrial activity on its health. And in the 20th century, we saw the effects of choices and lifestyles that had been made. Today, as we are moving into a new millennium, we can see that we are up against the forces of nature. And this is the time we're going through at the moment, a time of change, and we are all aware of it. We are all aware of ecology, and this is a new stage in human history, and you cannot separate it from group choices, collective choices that must be made, and this gives us greater responsibility. It gives us a different responsibility, and for all of us. Now, with this ecological awareness, or more specifically, climate awareness, humans are up against a great responsibility to the world and the future, perhaps greater than ever before, because it's not just the human race today, but the entire human race. And the future will depend on choices that we make, and choices that we make in a few months' time at the COP21 conference. If we don't act in the future, we can be fairly sure that conflicts will arise in different parts of the world because there will be a shortage of vital resources as caused by global warming and climate change. And perhaps that future is closer than we may think. There are entire civilizations which are under threat. And I would like to say it here at the headquarters of UNESCO, which is here to guard the heritage. We have the Pacific Islands, the Maldives, Bangkok, Venice, London. So many wonderful sites could disappear very soon if immediate action is not taken to stop the temperature rising and to stop sea level rising. If we do not do anything, we will have the sad privilege of being the generation that knew what had to be done and didn't do anything while there was still time to act, because we know that the planet is at the beginning of a long decline. And if there is not widespread action, then movements that started up decades ago can simply destroy the wonderful diversity we have and could endanger the ecosystems and all the different species after going through all sorts of convulsions, tumults, cataclysms, or even devastating epidemics. We know what responsibility human beings have in this. We must appeal to reason, to science and research. and find a new awareness. We have a new awareness of what impact we are having, the extraordinary impact we have had. And we also know what tools we can use to deal with these devastating consequences. And you, researchers from around the world, and particularly the members of the IPCC, you started raising awareness on this, started issuing warnings to what was happening with climate change. And you started on a long path to get people realizing the human sources of these disturbances and to see what actions could be done by each and every one of us. Thanks to you now, we can see that we know. We know that over the last 40 years, that combustion of fossil energy and industrial processes have caused some 80% of the increases in greenhouse gas emissions. And we know that we can have resilient societies with a low carbon footprint, but this is an ambitious approach and we need great efforts from all countries in the world. Now, to combat these changes, we also realize that there are two key levers for action. One is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and the other is to change the behavior patterns of human society to reduce the impact on climate change. We know all this, so we must take action. You have come from around the world with your scientific knowledge and your technical skills to find sustainable responses to these challenges. And you too, yesterday, today, and in the future, can help us make our changes in our lives so that we can make the right decisions and changes in the interests of climate. And I would like to thank you for all this. We would like to express our gratitude. I would like to express my gratitude. Thanks to you, no one today can seriously question the role of human beings in climate change or human ability to control it. This is a huge change, and this gives us confidence for moving ahead to the COP21 conference. We are determined. You can rely on France's determination, given the difficult negotiations which will happen with 96 countries. And political action must now take your scientific discoveries and turn them into political decisions. We must find an agreement, and the negotiations have to be prepared as best as possible so that they can follow through. And you know that my country will support you here. And it's the entire civil society that must rally to the cause as well, so that the human race faces up to its responsibility in climate. And my colleague, Ségolène Royal, will speak on this in a moment. But I would like to say that as Minister of National Education, I shall be involved in this and fully involved in this. We have 12.5 million students, 2.5 million tertiary students. And they are particularly interested in this issue, and they too will be rallying to the cause with you. Ladies and gentlemen, yes, politics has a key role to play so that we can gain from recent progress made by science. It's going to be a difficult task, and to tackle it, we must be ambitious, brave, and united. And this morning, I have the impression that we are, and I would like to thank you.
That was the translator for Najava Lo Belkacem, Minister of Education in the French government. It's her keynote speech at the opening of the July 2015 conference on Our Common Future Under Climate Change. Now, in contrast, back as promised, the level of discourse and understanding of the global problem in the hearings in the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. This is from a September 2014 broadcast of The Daily Show. White House climate advisor John Holdren is responding to two climate change deniers.
Indiana's Larry Bouchon.
It's not about affecting the global temperature and climate change. There's public comments out there that question has been asked and answered, saying no.
Now, you should look at the scientific literature rather than the public comments.
With all due respect, Representative Bouchon, I suggest you get the Journal of Applied Meteorology and Climatology as opposed to the YouTube comment feed of Obama Lies 1776. But here's where Bouchon gives away the game.
All the climatologists whose career depends on the climate changing to keep themselves publishing articles. Yes, I could read that, but I don't believe it.
I do not believe the scientists because it is their profession, not their hobby. Well, since we're talking about the influence money might have on climate change opinion, it turns out Representative Bouchon's three biggest campaign donors are Murray Energy, Koch Enterprises, and Peabody Energy. And trust me, those three well-funded companies would love to disprove climate change to the satisfaction of the scientific community at large. So if scientists could be bought, these would have already made it rain in Nerd Town. Trust me. And again, I cannot stress this enough. This is the House of Representatives Committee on Science, Space, and Technology.
How long will it take for the sea level to rise 2 feet? I mean, think about it. If your ice cube melts in your glass, it doesn't overflow. It's displacement. I mean, this is the thing, some of the things that they're talking about mathematically and scientifically don't make sense.
Are you kidding me? I don't even know what to do with that. How far back to the elementary school core curriculum do we have to go to get someone on the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology caught up? Do we have to break out the paper mache and the baking soda so you can make a volcano? Is that what we have to do? Is that how basic the science class was when you went, nah, I don't need to know this anymore? I mean, for God's sakes, look, here's a glass of ice water. Hey, that ice isn't making the water overflow because it's already in the water. But imagine there's a whole bunch of other ice that's not in the water. It's on the land. You know, the part where the water isn't. And then when temperatures rise and the land ice melts enough, oh, it's everywhere! Do you understand?
And the applause for John Stewart is mixing with the clanking of ice cubes that he's adding to the overflowing glass of ice water on his desk, making a mess. In contrast to that, back to Paris, July 2015, the second keynote speech of the opening of the Our Common Future Under Climate Change conference was given by the French Minister for Ecology, Sustainable Development and Energy, Ségolène Royal. She is speaking through a translator.
Good morning to all. Dear Najat, Director General of UNESCO. Once again, I'd like to thank UNESCO for hosting those major events for the preparation of COP21. This conference is first of all a hallmark of the scientific excellence of speakers from all over the world. This is a unique, unprecedented event. If we all decide in December to set ambitious objectives and to give ourselves a mean to reach those objectives, then we will succeed. This meeting, this event, is a key event in the preparation of the Paris Climate Summit. Because without this conference, there wouldn't be a climate conference, there wouldn't be a framework United Nations conference from Rio, there would be no Kyoto Protocol in 1997. We wouldn't have won the battle of ideas against climate change deniers, those who denied the role played by greenhouse gas emissions and human activity. This really shows that knowledge is power. And today, we have this knowledge, thanks to you, thanks to scientists from all over the world, and that pushes us towards action. You have been responsible for giving us this objective knowledge, and you have taught us that the atmosphere has a memory, and that we cannot let warming speed up. A warming that took place at the end of the last ages cannot happen on a very fast scale without major consequences. If this happens, this will endanger life itself. Environmentalists are here, climatologists, biologists, oceanographers, economists, anthropologists, doctors, legal experts, sociologists, historians, physics, chemistry, geographers, all disciplines are represented here at this conference, and you have taught us that we are both stakeholders and we are also the receiving end of what is happening now. You've taught us that climate and biodiversity are tightly linked, that biodiversity is an indicator, a very reliable indicator of what goes wrong with climate. Glaciologists looked at ice caps and at the air that was trapped in the ice cap, and that enabled us to place climate change within the context of a long-term change. It also enabled us to anticipate future variations. Paleoclimatologists have noticed the following thing. Greenhouse gas concentrations that can be attributed to the industrial era have, in a very short frame of time, reached unprecedented levels, unprecedented in the past 800,000 years. And this acceleration and intensification exceeds the ability of a biosphere to deal with it and to self-regenerate. Marine biologists and oceanographers have shown us that if the oceans have been able to temper climate change, this was at the cost of a major and growing alteration of their chemical and physical makeup. We're now at a point, at a tipping point, where acidification is destroying marine biodiversity and its ecosystems. Thermal expansion results in sea level rise that threatens small island states and coastal areas throughout the world. The ocean is responsible for climate regulation, and today it can suffer from climate change, and it can even amplify climate change. Economists computed the cost of inaction, and they have noticed that extreme weather events are becoming more intense, more frequent, more destructive, with droughts in Africa, California, devastating floods, cyclones, typhoons, storms from east to west and north to south. And climate change also has a financial impact. Economists show us that acting to support the climate, investing in energy transition and in green growth, can be a source of renewed prosperity, of innovation. It can create jobs and sustainable jobs in poor countries where climate insecurity is a hindrance to development. Businesses and investors understand this more and more. Researchers and engineers have understood that these sentinels of climates that observe climate change, whose data enabled us to better understand modelization of the Earth's radiation, and to understand the connection between the Earth's radiation and the ocean, to understand what happens in the higher reaches of the atmosphere and how this has an impact on the melting of the ice cap. Anthropologists, philosophers, sociologists, and historians have understood that there isn't a disconnect between nature and society. In the past, human history was considered as an emancipation from nature. But now we understand that our environment is not just an externality. We understand that it's important to have close ties with nature and to set up new development models. All scientific disciplines are helping us better to understand climate change and better to assess their current and future risks. Now we must win the battle for action, since we have won the battle of ideas. There are still a few climate deniers here and there, but in December and beyond, we must win the battle for action, which is a matter of having a shared political will. We have reached a universal and legally binding agreement that is made to last, that can be regularly revised and updated through national contributions. We now have 43, including the one from the European Union, which is one of the strongest. Thanks to the initiative of the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, we have an ability to speed up the movement towards this universal and legally binding agreement. And this conference is going to be a basis to speed up the decisions that will take place in New York in September and to prepare the Paris Climate Conference. This is a shared yet differentiated responsibility that takes into account the situations, the different situations and expectations of all and sundry. From energy efficiency to renewable energies, clean transport, circular economy, positive energy building, sustainable cities, green chemistry, smart networks, biosourced materials and intermittent energy storage, carbon capture, and many, many other things. This is a huge field which the fight against climate change is opening up to the knowledge and the imagination of scientists, industry, services. And so we have to find a way of putting these innovations into practice in the most democratic way possible. It is also the way towards more hope for our citizens, more hope towards employment and better quality of life for all. Research hasn't stopped progressing and advancing. And this is the whole point of this scientific conference. Now, the question is not whether we should ask, but how we should ask. What operational solutions do we have to fight climate change and its immediate and future consequences? What advantages can we derive from this today and tomorrow in our territories and in our countries and on a global scale? How can we choose a low-carbon society and a low-carbon economy, not as a constraint, not as an unreachable objective, not as a disaster. On the contrary, it is an opportunity that we have to seize. It is a movement that we have to speed up. All of these questions and more are at the core of the debates that you are going to hold, and they are also at the core of the preparation of the next climate summit.
That was part of the keynote by Ségolène Royal, Minister for Ecology, Sustainable Development and Energy in the French government. She gave the keynote to the Paris Conference, Our Common Future Under Climate Change, in the early days of July 2015. Over 100 countries sent 2,000 delegates to Paris to discuss the physical, economic, and social aspects of climate change. Come back for more excerpts from this huge international conference when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Downloads are free, and we appreciate any size donation to keep TUC Radio on the air. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening.